Hello, everyone. This is Buckley Coslow in the NBC newsroom in New York. Over Japan, it's already the 4th of July, and Super Fortress bombers are giving the enemy homeland another big bang. A force described as very large smashed at four more industrial cities on Honshu and Shikoku just before dawn Japanese time. 500 or more B-29s are believed to have taken part in the raid and are now on their way back to their Marianas bases. All of today's targets were important communication centers for Japanese railroads and also have industrial works of importance to the Japanese war effort. Details of the raid have been held up pending the return of the super forts. A bulletin has just come in from Manila on the progress of the fighting in Borneo. Australian forces have captured the town of Sempangan and its big airdrome. Earlier today, the Melbourne radio announced that we had also captured the airdrome at Mangar. Australian forces have pushed within 6 miles of Balikpapan after a gain of 3 miles today. 7th Division Australian infantrymen report they are fighting through smoke and oil flames near the burning fuel installations. As Australian troops continued to drive inland on Borneo, a Netherlands official charged the Japanese army with new atrocities committed on the island against Japanese slave laborers. Officials revealed that the Japs had burned starving and sick laborers alive, setting fire to a native hospital before driving all able-bodied natives into the interior. Only 200 natives have been found in the Balikpapan area, ordinarily a heavily populated section. Nearly all were pathetic skeletons. Two men escaped from the burning hospital, but one of them died later, while the other is not expected to live. The Japs fired the hospital methodically, while the helpless patients stared at them from the wooden shelves they occupied as beds. By the time the Australians arrived, all buildings of any size were a mass of charred debris. The adventure of Shangri-La came to an end today as the last of the rescue expedition on New Guinea came back to civilization. He was Captain Cecil Waters, and he wore a 6 weeks' growth of beard along with a flaming headdress made from bird-of-paradise feathers. One of the Navy's flying boats based at Okinawa came back from her latest bombing raid in the Yellow Sea with an unexpected and not very welcome souvenir today. The souvenir was a 3-foot piece of mast from a Japanese ship, and it was embedded firmly in the belly side of the plane, a Navy privateer. The plane, with a crew of 11 and 2 passengers, was out 500 miles from Okinawa on a bombing run when a Jap ship was spotted. Lieutenant G.E. Miller of Long Beach, California, the pilot, took the ship down low for a strafing run. "I heard a tearing noise going through the plane," Miller said. "It was the mast of the Jap ship, and it ripped out most of the privateer's underside. We slid within 5 feet of the water before the plane finally pulled out safely," the skipper related. On the 500-mile flight back to Okinawa, however, the crewmen had to cling perilously to the sides of the plane to keep from slipping into the Pacific. Despite the damage, which knocked out all the controls on one side of the ship, she was brought back with all aboard and landed perfectly. Other flyers ranging out from Okinawa bases announced today that they had sunk 18 Japanese ships and damaged 16 others in the past 2 days. Among the damaged ships were 2 destroyer escorts and 2 large freighters, which were hit 5 miles from Shanghai. It was the first strike toward that great Chinese port by American Thunderbolts. The Japanese radio announced today that 2 more admirals had died in action, but gave no details. The deaths of at least 6 flag officers in the Jap Navy have been announced this week. A Dutch official said today that the exportation of real rubber will begin within a week after Balikpapan, Borneo, is liberated. The official expressed the belief that most of Borneo's rubber trees would be found intact. An unexpected dividend is being paid off by American air raids on Japan, the Japanese themselves revealed today. Incendiary bombs which have wrecked whole industrial areas have also razed warehouses and small food stores, thereby cutting deeply into Japanese food reserves. Tokyo announced today that food rations are being cut another 10% in the home islands. Rice, one of the principal items of Japanese diet, is becoming scarce, and the Japs are reported seeking new sources for starch. An even more powerful blow at the Japanese pantry is in the making, according to army men in Washington. As soon as industrial targets are thoroughly plastered, the big superfortress bombers will begin to concentrate on Japanese ports and rail communications. Now for the news of the American arrival in Germany's capital, we take you to NBC in Berlin.
This is Roy Porter in Berlin. This battered former capital of Germany is occupied and well occupied tonight by armed forces of three nations, Russia, America, and Britain. By lengthy negotiation and formal agreement with the Soviets, American and British forces began to move into their separate zones today. And not the smallest of the units were two large groups of war correspondents who rode almost at the head of the long convoys which crossed the Elbe River for the first time officially since the Nazi surrender. It was a complicated procedure, made so primarily by Soviet outposts, damaged bridges, and mud. Brigadier General John Collier of Dallas, commanding general of the 2nd Armored Division, led the parade. He and the press managed to get through after a long trip in the rain. The 2nd Armored itself was not so lucky. They sent some of their lighter vehicles in the line all right, but when the heavy tanks began to hit one of the temporary bridges over the Mulde River, the timbers began to creak and the structure began to sway, and the tanks are still waiting far behind. But according to plan, they've got to be here tomorrow, because the Americans are going to celebrate the 4th of July in Berlin with a flag-raising ceremony at the old Adolf Hitler Barracks, the school for Nazi military, which before 1933 was known as the Kaiser Wilhelm Cadet School. When the American flag flies over those bomb-shattered buildings tomorrow, it will signal the formal occupation of one zone in Berlin by American troops. It may be that General Bradley will be here for the ceremony, and if he is, Marshal Zhukov has promised to come too. If he can't make it, Major General Floyd Parks, commanding officer of the 1st Airborne Army, will officiate, and another Russian general will fill Zhukov's place. There'll be only 100 American soldiers and 100 Russian soldiers participating in the actual ceremony. And a 48-gun salute will finish off our 4th of July in Berlin. The British are planning to hold a review in their part of the city, too. And these two ceremonies will be the start of a whole series of celebrations while the formal occupations are established. Some French troops are expected soon to take over a newly defined zone in the eastern section, but the plans haven't gone very far yet. That will make three principal zones and one smaller one, splitting Berlin into sectors or concessions and beginning the first Allied control of the heart of defeated Nazi Germany. Now let me tell you a little about how this whole plan is going to work. Major General Parks of the 1st Airborne Army has also become the top-ranking officer of the Berlin District Command. As such, he will represent the occupying force set up early last month by General Eisenhower, Marshal Zhukov, and Field Marshal Montgomery. In other words, General Parks is the man with the big stick for the Allied Control Council. And in a few days, one of General Parks' units, the 2nd Armored, which, among other things, invaded Holland and crossed the Rhine, will have moved in about 16,000 men and about 4,000 vehicles of all kinds. All of these troops will be under General Collier's orders, because that general is the man who wields the big stick for the boss. This will be a joint American-British force. The British are going to send more troops in later. And, of course, the Russians are maintaining their own garrison. The British general, incidentally, on the spot, will be General L.O. Lyne, and he'll have with him his famous division of Desert Rats, the people who defeated Rommel in Africa. And so you see, it's going to be quite a famous outfit all around. Now, meanwhile, the Russians are cooperating for all their worth and to the best of their ability. And they are moving a lot of their troops westward, into such areas as Halle and Weimar and others, where the Americans have held temporary control up to now. A lot of them even got in our way today, and parts of our convoy were delayed a long time. But it was all settled very peacefully. There was much solution.
I'll take your pardon.
And if you want to know the real truth, the Russians seemed very happy to see us. This is Roy Porter in Berlin, returning you to the NBC newsroom in New York.
You have just heard a special broadcast from Berlin, Germany, by NBC's Roy Porter, describing the arrival of American occupation forces in the capital today. Here in the United States, Harry Hopkins, who has been confidential advisor to two presidents, announced today that he was stepping out of public life. Hopkins, who has been in frail health for several years, sent President Truman a letter of resignation as his special assistant. The time has come when I must take a rest, Hopkins told Truman. He had indicated previously that he would be unable to accompany the president to the forthcoming Big Three meeting at Berlin. In spite of failing health, Hopkins had continued to act as special emissary for the White House and recently returned from a special mission to Moscow. He came to the government originally as Works Progress Administrator in 1935 and immediately became one of the closest advisors to President Roosevelt. He was Secretary of Commerce from 1938 until 1940 and then helped to develop this country's lend-lease program. He became a special assistant to the president in 1941 and continued the role until today. Hopkins ended his government career with words of praise for President Truman. Courageous administration, he said, of the chief executive's foreign and domestic policy. Stanislaw Mikołajczyk, the new vice premier of the Polish government of Warsaw, declared today that the time has come for the establishment of normal diplomatic relations with Warsaw. Mikołajczyk, speaking from Warsaw in a special interview with NBC reporter Robert Magadoff, appealed for international understanding of what he termed Poland's sincere desire to live in closest collaboration with our nearest and strongest neighbor, Soviet Russia. Poland wants to maintain its already strong ties with Great Britain, France, and the United States, and also live in harmony with the United Nations, said the vice premier, who once headed Poland's government in exile in London. It is no longer true that there is any division in Polish allegiance, Mikołajczyk related. The people of Warsaw and Poland have welcomed the new regime on Polish soil and are giving it their wholehearted support. Pope Pius XII gave his blessing to the United States Navy today and expressed the hope that it would protect and defend the most precious treasure of this world, peace. Europe will always be grateful, the Pope declared, for the assistance America has given it. A Wisconsin congressman declared in the House today that a national scandal exists in the manipulations of the rye market at Chicago. The congressman, Keefe, said that a group of manipulators has obtained a corner on the rye market, with the result that prices in that grain are much higher than those for wheat and corn. He demanded a congressional investigation of rye market activities. The only immediate comment on Keefe's charges came from Congressman Sabbath of Illinois, who told the House that the Wisconsin congressman was justified in his statements because, to quote, there is something wrong somewhere, unquote. In Kansas, heavy rains and cool weather have delayed the winter wheat harvest and reduced the state's estimated yield by millions of bushels. The current forecast places the yield at less than 200 million bushels in Kansas, about the same as last year's crop. Congressman Rankin of Mississippi, who said yesterday that he didn't want to be chairman of the House Committee on Un-American Activities, made it clear today that he wants to say something about who will be the chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, here's a summary of the top headlines now. Harry Hopkins has resigned from government service due to ill health. Vice Premier Mikołajczyk of the new Polish government says the time has come for other nations to give Warsaw formal diplomatic recognition. Nearly 500 Superfortress raiders have made a new attack on the Japanese homeland. American occupation forces are now in Berlin. In the sports world today, the Boston Braves took a real pasting from the Chicago Cubs. Score, Chicago 24, Boston 2. In the only other daytime game, Pittsburgh defeated Philadelphia 10-3. And that's the news from around the world to this moment from the NBC newsroom in New York. Buckley Coslow speaking. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Isle Van at 11, Richard Harkness at 11:15 over WEAF, NBC in New York.
Good evening, everybody. This is Lyle Vann with the 11 o'clock report from the NBC Newsroom, brought to you by Bond Clothes. In the headlines tonight, the huge Superfort Armada has paid a 4th of July visit to Japan. Then the voice of NBC's Roy Porter telling us how American troops entered Berlin. Harry Hopkins has resigned as special advisor to the president. I'll be back with tonight's full news report. Now here's Bob Stanton with a message to the men from Bond Clothes.
B.C., gentlemen, and this time I don't mean a period in history, because these two letters also stand for Bond Clothes. And say, I guess you might call Bond Clothes a history-making setup at that. Because for 10 years now, more men have worn Bond Clothes than any other clothes in America. Yes, the Bond name has been on top for a long time, and still is, as a matter of fact. And little wonder, because Bond's history has been built on the basis of clothes of the better sort for less. That runs the whole gamut of quality, too. Superior pure wool fabrics, expert needlework, and flawless fit. Yes, it'll pay you handsomely next time you need a new suit to make Bond, the nation's number one tailor, your tailor. And you can do it for very little money, too. From $28 to $40.75. There's a Bond store in Manhattan on 42nd Street, opposite the Grand Central Terminal. Now, here's Lyle Vann with the news.
It was already the 4th of July in Japan when nearly 500 American Superforts appeared overhead above industrial targets on Honshu and Shikoku Islands. Appeared overhead carrying 3,000 tons of unfriendly fireworks for the enemy down below. Thus began Independence Day for the fighting crews of our giant bombers carrying the aerial offensive against the Mikado's imperial nest to a new high. War industries were the targets in this third all-out attack in 3 days. There's no such thing as Independence Day in Japan, you know. Meanwhile, the new invasion of Borneo at Balikpapan is going ahead, turning enemy airfields near the oil port into fighter bases for Allied aircraft, now near enough to attack Java, the heart of the Dutch East Indies. The Australian commander in the Balikpapan area says the campaign already is won strategically. Aussie troops are pressing northward, headed for the last Borneo oil field still in enemy hands. And over on Asia's mainland, victory is the underlying theme of the communiques issued by the Chinese High Command. Chungking reports that Chinese forces have dented the east flank of Japan's important Hong Kong-Hankou corridor when they captured the highway center of Sinfeng. Meanwhile, Tokyo is grinding out its usual propaganda broadcasts, declares that new Japanese fighter planes now being manufactured underground will soon take to the air to meet the B-29 menace. Then another broadcast says that the food situation is growing worse, tells the people to get set for a 10% cut in food rations until the fall harvest. Today, American occupation troops rolled into Berlin, and among the American newsmen in the vanguard of the triumphal march was NBC's Roy Porter, who broadcast the story of the entry into the German capital earlier tonight. It was transcribed then for rebroadcast now, so here is Roy Porter with the story of Berlin today.
This is Roy Porter in Berlin. This battered former capital of Germany is occupied and well occupied tonight by armed forces of three nations, Russia, America, and Britain. By lengthy negotiation and formal agreement with the Soviets, American and British forces began to move into their separate zones today. And not the smallest of the units were two large groups of war correspondents who rode almost at the head of the long convoys which crossed the Elbe River for the first time officially since the Nazi surrender. It was a complicated procedure, made so primarily by Soviet outposts, damaged bridges, and mud. Brigadier General John Collier of Dallas, commanding general of the 2nd Armored Division, led the parade. He and the press managed to get through after a long trip in the rain. The 2nd Armored itself was not so lucky. They sent some of their lighter vehicles in the line all right, but when the heavy tanks began to hit one of the temporary bridges over the Mulde River, the timbers began to creak and the structure began to sway. And the tanks are still waiting far behind. But according to plan, they've got to be here tomorrow, because the Americans are going to celebrate the 4th of July in Berlin with a flag-raising ceremony at the old Adolf Hitler Barracks, the school for Nazi military, which before 1933 was known as the Kaiser Wilhelm Cadet School. When the American flag flies over those bomb-shattered buildings tomorrow, it will signal the formal occupation of one zone in Berlin by American troops. It may be that General Bradley will be here for the ceremony. And if he is, Marshal Zhukov has promised to come, too. If he can't make it, Major General Floyd Parks, commanding officer of the 1st Airborne Army, will officiate, and another Russian general will fill Zhukov's place. There'll be only 100 American soldiers and 100 Russian soldiers participating in the actual ceremony. And a 48-gun salute will finish off our 4th of July in Berlin. The British are planning to hold a review in their part of the city, too. And these two ceremonies will be the start of a whole series of celebrations while the formal occupations are established. Some French troops are expected soon to take over a newly defined zone in the eastern section. But the plans haven't gone very far yet. That will make three principal zones and one smaller one, splitting Berlin into sectors or concessions and beginning the first Allied control of the heart of defeated Nazi Germany. Now, let me tell you a little about how this whole plan is going to work. Major General Parks of the 1st Airborne Army has also become the top-ranking officer of the Berlin District Command. As such, he will represent the occupying force set up early last month by General Eisenhower, Marshal Zhukov, and Field Marshal Montgomery. In other words, General Parks is the man with the big stick for the Allied Control Council. And in a few days, one of General Parks' units, the 2nd Armored, which, among other things, invaded Holland and crossed the Rhine, will have moved in about 16,000 men and about 4,000 vehicles of all kinds. All of these troops will be under General Collier's order, because that general is the man who wields the big stick for the boss. This will be a joint American-British force. The British are going to send more troops in later. And, of course, the Russians are maintaining their own garrison. The British general, incidentally, on the spot, will be General L.O. Line. And he'll have with him his famous division of desert rats, the people who defeated Rommel in Africa. And so you see, it's going to be quite a famous outfit all around. Now, meanwhile, the Russians are cooperating for all they're worth and to the best of their ability. And they are moving a lot of their troops westward into such areas as Halle and Weimar and others where the Americans have held temporary control up to now. A lot of them even got in our way today, and parts of our convoy were delayed a long time. But it was all settled very peacefully. There was much saluting.
I beg your pardon.
And if you want to know the real truth, the Russians seemed very happy to see us. This is Roy Porter in Berlin, returning you to the NBC newsroom in New York.
That was a transcribed broadcast made earlier tonight by NBC's Roy Porter, now in Berlin. This has been a full day up on Capitol Hill, plenty of activity, bearing on America's place in the post-war world. Harry Hopkins, the man who has been confidential advisor and wartime emissary for two presidents, resigned today, stepped out of public life because of poor health. President Truman accepted the Hopkins resignation in a letter, expressed regret at the resignation, praised Hopkins for the service he has given to his country. Mr. Truman had been planning for Hopkins to go with him to the coming Big Three meeting set for later this month. But the White House said that Joseph Davies will attend the conference after first going on a second special mission to London for President Truman. Late this afternoon, the Senate Banking Committee acted on the Bretton Woods Monetary Plan, voted 14-4 its approval of the legislation enabling the United States to participate in the stabilization structure. Four Republican senators voted against the plan, Taft, Thomas, Butler, and Milliken, and three Republicans voted with 11 Democrats for the plan. Meanwhile, in the Senate today, GOP Senator Bushfield leveled one of the first full-fledged attacks against the charter. Bushfield declared that the charter has at least six flaws which should be corrected before it is ratified. The GOP senator said he was in a position where he would have to support the charter, yet he served notice that he would seek reservations, amendments, when the treaty comes before the Senate for ratification, possibly late this month. On the White House terrace, in bright sunlight today, James Burns took the oath as the new Secretary of State, then made a plea for worldwide tolerance. Burns was attended by President Truman and the outgoing Secretary of State, Edward R. Stettinius, was sworn in before an applauding throng of the nation's highest officials. On the home front, President Truman has ordered most government agencies to cut their work week to 44 hours, effective immediately. Up to now, all government agencies have maintained a 48-hour, six-day week throughout the war. And out at Akron, Ohio, government seizure, the strike-paralyzed Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company plants moved a step nearer today when the National War Labor Board turned the dispute over to economic stabilizer William H. Davis. Meanwhile, at the also strike-bound Firestone plants, more than 16,000 workers refused to comply with a WLB back-to-work order, said they would not return under present conditions. And on the financial front here at home, the Federal Reserve Board put the brakes on the stock market, acted to cut down on speculation. Effective the day after tomorrow, margin requirements will be raised from 50 to 75%. The delivery men of New York's newspapers are still on strike, the dispute a deadlock. However, the union agreed today to appear at a show cause hearing before the War Labor Board in Washington tomorrow. Yesterday, the WLB sent a directive to the union ordering it to end the strike or appear at the hearing. So today, while the strike is continuing, union leaders announced they will have their attorneys at the hearing. Thus, the situation remains pretty much as it has been since last Saturday night. I'll be back in a moment with more items in the weather report. Now, here's a message to the men from Bond Clothes.
Well, variety is the spice of foot comfort during the summer. So, of course, you need shoes to wear around the house and garden evenings and weekends. Yes, and you need some for the beach and the golf course, too. But woe is you. Nary a single valid shoe coupon in any of the family's ration books. A tough situation? Not by a long shot, sir. Just stop by at Bond's. They're practically headquarters in town for ration-free shoes. You'll get a kick out of their dandy selection. Swell slack shoes and sandals at just $2.95. Comfortable camp moccasins for $2.45. And yes, some of your favorite Mexican hand-woven huaraches. Bond priced at just $3.95. Also swell pigskin leather strap sandals with sturdy brown rubber soles at $2.95. No, sir, no ration coupon necessary. And, oh, man, are those words sounding sweet to your ears. Well, why not stop by at Bond's and outfit your feet for a summer chuck full of easy comfort? There are 12 large Bond stores conveniently located in the metropolitan area. One of them is Bond's huge showplace at Broadway and 45th Street, which remains open every evening until 9. Now here's Lyle Vann again
with the Major League Baseball scores. In the National League, the Cubs overwhelmed the Braves 24-2. Pittsburgh defeated Philadelphia 10-3. In night games, Brooklyn was defeated by Cincinnati 5-1, and the New York Giants nosed out the Cards 3-2. In the American League, Boston shut out Detroit 4-0, and in night games, final score, New York Yankees 2, Cleveland 5. Washington 7, Chicago 0 in the fourth inning, and Philadelphia St. Louis 0-0 in the fourth inning. Well, tomorrow is the 4th of July. As a matter of fact, this year's Independence Day will be here before another hour has passed. President Truman has set the theme for this wartime 4th, has issued a statement calling on the nation to honor the creed of liberty, stresses that all Americans should honor the men and women of the armed forces who are carrying this creed with them throughout the world. Out on Okinawa, one of our most famous soldiers, General Joseph Stilwell, has done just that, honored his men, told them in a broadcast carried over the island hookup that he wanted to take his battered old campaign hat off to them in an Independence Day salute. Yes, another 4th of July is almost here, and the weatherman says it's going to be just about the best it can be as far as atmosphere is concerned. The forecast is for sunny and pleasant in New York City and vicinity, with the highest temperature around 85 degrees. At the moment, it's 74. And that's the 11 o'clock report from the NBC newsroom. It's now exactly 16 seconds past 11:14, and this is Lyle Vann speaking for Bond Clothes, inviting you to be with us tomorrow and every night at 11. So good night until tomorrow night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.